Hey everybody, welcome to This Week in MLS. I'm Jimmy Vance, executive producer of Atlanta United Radio, 99 The Game. And here joining me once again is Jason Longshore, color analyst of Atlanta United Radio and host of Soccer Down Here, 9 to 11 a.m. Blog Talk Radio. Jason, how you doing?
Doing well. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you getting an episode out last week when I was feeling ill. So I appreciate you stepping up with that. And boy, Jason, let's get to it. A ton of action this past weekend around MLS, and a bunch of shock results, and you know, a bunch of controversy as well. So let's get to it. Basically, let's first just talk about briefly Atlanta United versus Toronto. And if you want more analysis of that, check out the full-time report, everybody. That's on Off the Woodwork on iTunes, and it's on the 99 The Game website. And also, we're going to be talking about it more with Jason and Mike Conti and myself on Stoppage Time this Wednesday at 2 p.m. on the 99 The Game Facebook page. But Jason, we were there. You know, Atlanta United, you know, went down a goal, then stormed back with two goals from Joseph Martinez, and then a late equalizer in stoppage time, and Toronto gets points where they were very desperate. They needed to basically get 3 points, but, you know, they settled to get a point. And Atlanta United, again, closing out some games lately have been an Achilles heel for the team.
Yeah, we'll get into a little bit of it on the Whiteboard Chronicles on Wednesday on stoppage time. But closing out games, I think, is a statement that can get abused a little bit. Yes, Atlanta United has had some leads that they have conceded, but not all of them have been the same. I think the two that you have to look at in comparison are the Dallas match and Toronto, in terms of some similarities in the way that you conceded. And it's something that Atlanta United's going to have to address. It's something Atlanta's going to have to get better at with opposition that wants to stretch out the back line late in the match. And generally, when Atlanta United is able to control possession and dictate the match, they're able to avoid this when they get stretched out. But late in the match, when they do sit a little bit deeper, we saw it in Dallas where they put a line of four against Toronto. What they did is Telfer and Osorio stayed out very wide on the touchline, opened things up. Altidore would play next to Ricketts or sometimes drop off, and Giovinco was roaming in behind. It was an incredibly aggressive lineup at the end from Toronto because it had to be. They didn't have any choice at that point because a loss there could have ended their playoff hopes. The draw helps a little bit. I mean, a point's a point. They, at the end of the day, they end up staying 6 points back, which is where they started. But you don't know what's going to happen later at that point. Toronto has to go for it. They did. They get the goal. We'll break it down more as to how they got it and what Atlanta can do down the road to try to change this. But a couple other things just real quick before we move on. Eric Rometty, another really strong performance from him in the middle of the park. Had to go to the 3-5-2 in this one because of the suspension to Franco Escobar, the injuries to Sal Zizo and Mikey Ambrose, and it came out today that Mikey Ambrose is out for 3 to 4 months after surgery to repair a torn meniscus. This is an issue for Atlanta, and the transfer window is still open through Wednesday. If there is an outside back in the league that can play on either side, left or right back, Atlanta United might be inquiring about their availability. And there's a few out there that are on the bench at different clubs. Eric Miller in Minnesota, who was part of a deal with Colorado earlier this year. He hasn't played a ton for the Loons. He could be an option. Raymond Gattis in Philadelphia is another one who I think would fit the system pretty well. We had somebody on Soccer Down Here this morning suggest Saad Abdul-Salam with NYCFC. I think that's probably the least likely because I don't think they'd want to help Atlanta out, and they might actually need the depth. But there are some players like that. You could sign a guy from USL as well. It's going to be a question for Tata Martino and Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eales because you had George Bello in the 18 this weekend. you weren't going to bring on Bello at the end of this match to see it out, because that's a really tough spot for your debut against the defending champs in a desperation situation. But are you comfortable with Bello if needed? Are you comfortable with Jose Hernandez if needed? Are you comfortable with Andrew Wheeler Aminu or Julian Gressel at right back if needed? I think those are the questions as you look to build to finish this roster for the stretch run.
And before we go to the next match, just wanted to briefly bring this up for Toronto. You know, they you saw the desperation at the end of the match, and man, Jason, I'm looking over their schedule. I'm looking at the next seven matches here, and they're going to need to be almost perfect. And they have one of the toughest stretches coming up here, Jason. So they've got at home NYCFC, and then they can play at San Jose, and then they play Montreal at home, big derby match, at Portland, LAFC at home, LA Galaxy at home, at Red Bulls. Like, that is a tough stretch against almost six out of seven playoff teams right there. They're going to have to be almost perfect to get into the playoffs. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, it's brutal. I mean, you know, you're in the spot for a reason. And if Toronto does get into the playoffs, they will have definitely earned it with that type of stretch run. I think they're healthy. I mean, I think they're starting to get back into form. It was interesting to watch this one because Toronto's a team that generally controls possession. They're one of the top teams in the league over the last few years in possession. They had about a third of the possession in the first half. And as Atlanta got the 2-1 lead and dropped off a bit, then Toronto came back into the game in possession, but they still ended up with less than 50%. I want to see what they end up doing with now Chris Mavinga suspended after the red card, after the final whistle, see if he gets any extra games, which is a possibility. And I want to see when Drew Moore gets back. Toronto's got a lot of questions right now. They are playing better than they have all season, but is it going to be enough? I don't know.
Now let's go to Jason. A wild one again, Orlando versus New England, 3-3 draw in Orlando. And this is one of your desperation derbies from last week. Man, what a crazy one. A bunch of lead changes, and Scott Sutter's goal in the 93rd minute gives a slight hope to Orlando. What do you think of this wild one, Jason?
Yeah, the Lions still have some life. They came from behind twice. Came from behind, got the 93rd minute goal to equalize. As I was leaving Mercedes-Benz Stadium Saturday night, so, you know, the day started with Atlanta and Toronto, and it's like, wow, okay, Atlanta, you know, supporter shield lead, all teams are going to be able to catch up. And I'm driving home listening to Orlando and New England on Sirius XM FC, and I mean, it was a wild listen. The Orlando announcers were crazy because it was a crazy game. Teal Bunbury puts New England in the lead after Orlando had come back from a 2-0 lead for the Revs. And it looked like New England was going to get the win, solidify, you know, kind of their spot for a little while in the playoff race. And then Scott Sutter gets the goal late. Juan Agudelo had a goal and an assist. We'll talk a little bit more about Juan Agudelo in a bit. He's still one of the biggest enigmas in American soccer to me. But an underrated part of this one that I think is going to hurt Orlando next week is the red card to Yoshi Yotun at the end. That's going to be a problem for him. Yotun is such an important player for Orlando, and I don't know how much margin for error they have at the moment.
Now let's go to FC Dallas for San Jose. Man, just like you were saying, we're going out of the bends. This is one of them. I'm like, oh, FC Dallas is going to be an easy one. Worst team in the league, San Jose. But Jarrett Smith, San Jose Earthquakes, Jason, stun FC Dallas at home 3-1. And their first loss in almost a year at home. Nobody could have predicted this one.
No, and this is why you can't freak out about results, because you never know what's going to happen at this point. Atlanta United fans were frantic after the late goal from Toronto, because it's like, oh no, Dallas is playing San Jose. That's an easy 3 points for Dallas. Not so fast. And Vaco from the Earthquakes gets two goals. Wondolowski with a great dribbling run to set Vaco up for the third one, the kill shot. It was just one of those days for Dallas. First loss in 17 matches at home. Dallas, I think, will be just fine. And I actually worry about Dallas probably the most when it comes to the supporter shield from an Atlanta United perspective. But they've got to get Pablo Arangues on the field. They've got to get Dominic Baggi into the mix and see what this team can truly be, because they're still missing Mauro Diaz. They're still kind of figuring out what the attack looks like, because Max Yoderuti is not giving you quite enough. I think it's time for Oscar Pereja to get Baggi on, get Arangues on, and see what Dallas can turn into. They have a little bit of a cushion in the Western Conference, but Portland is starting to close the gap a bit.
Now, another crazy one, Jason. Minnesota versus Seattle. Minnesota with the 1-0 lead going into stoppage time, and Seattle stuns the Loons of two goals in stoppage time to steal the 3 points. And now, I mean, before we get into it, Seattle, 5 wins out of the last 7. 7 matches unbeaten. They are doing what they've done in the past couple of years. Started off slow, and now they're surging towards the playoffs, Jason.
Oh, man, Minnesota's got all kinds of crazy stuff going on right now. Seattle, it's a huge comeback for them, and it's one of those games that, as you're trying to climb the ladder, it's one that can give you a ton of momentum. Raul Ruiz Diaz has been an excellent addition. He has the assist. Will Bruin has the goal. And Seattle gets 3 points. Minnesota, though, Minnesota's right there, and they've got a big road stretch coming up. You had Christian Ramirez out of the 18. Now we're getting rumors, and before we finish tonight, we might actually have confirmation that Christian Ramirez is getting traded, it looks like, to LAFC. Angelo Rodriguez, the new designated player forward, he got the start. Abu Dunlady came off the bench. Looks like Ramirez is out. And remember, Ramirez is the guy who was scoring all the goals for Minnesota United in the North American Soccer League, scored all the goals last season for Minnesota United, and now he's on the road out. That's going to be an emotional letdown for the fan base, because Ramirez is a fan favorite. Francisco Calvo had another kind of weird statement to the media after the game, like asking them to stop comparing the new guy Rodriguez to Ramirez. And you had a statement that was sent from one of Ramirez's family members, supposedly his aunt, to local media. And then it made its way to Twitter about how Adrian Heath never valued Ramirez. So you've got all of that stuff going on. You had a discussion that looked pretty heated between Calvo and Darwin Quintero at the final whistle. Minnesota had dragged themselves with that little homestand into playoff contention, and now you have a lot of questions about the Loons. Seattle, on the other hand, looks to be pretty good shape, and they're climbing the ladder. They still got to get past Salt Lake, though.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about Minnesota and Seattle in our stock up, stock down portion coming up in the show. Jason, here's another one. NYCFC versus Vancouver. Everybody, after the Toronto match was like, oh, going to get, NYCFC is going to catch ground on us. You know, they've been just unstoppable at home. 10 wins and 1 draw at home. Hey, Vancouver gets a late equalizer, 2-2 draw to share the points at Yankee Stadium. Impressive performance by Vancouver to get some points there.
Vancouver is one of the weirdest teams in MLS, and they've been that way for years. This is nothing new. I feel like they have more talent than an 8-9-6 record. And that seems to be what they do every year, is that kind of record. It's right in the middle, sometimes a little bit better than 500, sometimes a little bit worse. It's just right there, average to mediocre. And I never expected them to go to Yankee Stadium and find a way, but they do play very direct. They don't need a ton of width, and Yankee Stadium, you're not going to find that with. And Eric Hurtado gets the goal late. They had a chance to win it. Breck Shea put a free kick off the crossbar in stoppage time, and I would have been throwing things all over my apartment if Breck Shea had won that for Vancouver. That would have helped Atlanta out a lot. But again, you can't expect anything in this league because you had the top two teams in the Eastern Conference both drop points at home late. Atlanta to Toronto on paper doesn't look good because of where Toronto is in the standings, but we know this is a better Toronto FC team than their record. NYCFC dropping points to Vancouver, that was very unexpected. Anything can happen in Major League Soccer, and especially this time of year as teams are starting to figure themselves out and get aligned for the stretch run.
Now let's go out west. Colorado versus LA Galaxy. Colorado gets a stunning 2-1 victory over the Galaxy. And, you know, Zlatan Ibrahimovic didn't show up for the MLS All-Star game, so he took a suspension. And, you know, I think LA Galaxy and they were a little too, you know, confident going into this one. And they get stunned by Acosta in the Rapids, Jason. What'd you think of Colorado's 2-1 with a late winner?
Yeah, it's pretty funny to see this situation where LA decided, yeah, sure, Zlatan, you don't have to go play in the All-Star game. It's okay. We're going to Colorado afterwards. We'll be just fine. And Colorado is not the same Colorado that we've been seeing lately. Kellen Acosta does change things for the Colorado Rapids. Bobby Warshaw had a pretty good breakdown of the 4-4-2 diamond on MLSsoccer.com. Check that out. That's how Colorado is going to play the rest of the way. And the thing with LA is just their defense is always going to be an issue. It's just flat out not good enough. And they can't get by on one goal. They have to score two or three to be in a match. That's just the nature of the 2018 Los Angeles Galaxy.
And now let's finish it up with the match yesterday, Jason. Red Bulls versus LAFC, and the Red Bulls get a big win for them, 2-1, and they close the gap in the Supporters Shield and Easter Conference race. They still got a couple matches in hand on Atlanta United to they you know, possibly can go leap over them coming up.
Yeah, this was a really interesting one to me because I thought LAFC controlled a lot of the match, but this is an LAFC team that just has struggled against top teams all season long. They have one win against a team in the top eight, and that was over Columbus at the Bank of California Stadium. They've got to figure out the number six now because Mark Anthony Kay is done for the year with the ankle injury. They played Benny Failhaber, Lee Wynn, Carlos Vela as your three central midfielders. That's really aggressive. That's fun to watch. It also has no balance, and their back line is just not good enough. With that in front of them, they're not good enough. You need a top four-man back line to be able to play behind three central midfielders that are that attack-minded. I thought Failhaber was about as disciplined as you can possibly be playing the six if you are not a six. And it's just they're always susceptible on the counter. They're always susceptible when the opponent is able to get any sustained pressure on them. I think LAFC has to go find a six or they're not going to do what they could do. And we can actually do a breaking news sounder or something if we have it. Christian Ramirez is headed to LAFC. That deal is done tonight. I don't know what that means exactly because he's not playing over Diamande. He's not playing over Marco Urania, I don't think. Maybe over Urania because Urania's been good, but he can't score. He's been really good in creating and movement and all that. Diamande did leave this match injured with a hamstring, I believe. If there's concern about that, then maybe that's why you go get Christian Ramirez. And we'll get into the particulars of that deal when we get into the news segment. But I think LAFC has to go find a six. That's the most important thing here. On the other side, Red Bulls, they're starting to play a little bit differently under Chris Armas. It's not just press and make the game chaotic. Armas seems to be working on a little more possession-based play for the Red Bulls. And if they can find the happy medium between the two, they'll be a handful for opponents the rest of the way. I think right now, though, they sometimes do get caught between the two, and I think that's what Columbus took advantage of. I think Chris Armas is still kind of learning how to be in charge, and there's going to be times this season where teams can take advantage of that. Columbus absolutely did last week, but he gets the job done here. It's a big 3 points at home, and now we get to see how they do next against Toronto.
Now let's go into let's talk about the Supporters Shield race, Jason. As of now, I think it's five teams in the race. It's Atlanta United with 48 points, and it's about they have about two points per game. It's Red Bulls at 44 with 2 points per game. They have two matches in hand on Atlanta United. NYCFC's got 44 points. They've got one match in hand on Atlanta United. Then you've got FC Dallas at 42 points. And they're at about 1.91 points per game. And then you have Portland at 37 points, 1.85 points per game. But they've got they've only played 20 matches. So they've got four matches in hand on Atlanta United. So and Portland's got a 15-match unbeaten streak. So you never know with some more fixtures coming up and with Atlanta United off this week. Some of these teams are going to be catching up on the fixture, so we should get a better, a little more clearer of how condensed it's going to be. But it's going to be a thrilling race for the Supporters Shield and for the Eastern Conference and Western Conference races.
Yeah, Jason. I think it's going to be the best Supporters Shield race we've ever seen in Major League Soccer, because right now you have Atlanta and the Red Bulls on 2 points per game. You have NYC and Dallas on 1.91 points per game, and you have Portland on 1.85. All five of those teams are going to be in it all the way down to the stretch. So Portland is kind of the sneaky one that just keeps climbing. They have not lost at home yet. They're 3-3-4 on the road. They're very good defensively, and I feel like they have the right kind of attack that doesn't need a ton of the ball, and they're just lethal on that counter. NYC, you know, you've had David Villa out for a while. Dome Torrent has been getting results without him. We'll see how they can integrate him back into the group. And Torrent has talked about how they like to attack using the wings, which is a little different. And we'll see if that can continue. Talked about Red Bulls and kind of the transformation we're seeing under Chris Armas and how that continues. And we'll see how Atlanta and Dallas bounce back, you know, because Atlanta, that last minute goal from Toronto is a punch to the mouth. We'll see how they respond. This year they've responded incredibly well every time they've dropped points. We'll see if that continues against Columbus. And Dallas, losing to San Jose is a big time punch to the mouth, and we'll see how they bounce back next weekend.
And Jason, I wanted to give you a little trivia. Who was the last team to beat Portland?
Oh, wow. It's forever ago.
Yeah. That's why it's a little bit more shocking.
is it somebody like Vancouver? Who?
No. Orlando. Oh, wow. Yeah. Before they figured out what they were going to be, or way early in the season.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's crazy to think about, but Orlando caught Portland at the right time. All right, everybody. Now let's get into the stock up and stock down portion of the show. And Jason, I'm going to give you a couple of mine. I'm going to go with Seattle stock up. Won 5 out of the last 7, and they are just keep on going up the table, and it's just almost like last year, same thing. But now they're getting healthy, and they've got the striker Rudiez up top to give them that spark, and just coming back from the death and stoppage time. That is going to springboard them, I think it'd give them way more confidence going into the final stretch of the season. For sure.
They're in a great spot right now. Rui Diaz just completely has changed what this team could be. They tried to get Paulo Hurtado and doesn't look like he's coming. He has been announced as going to Konyaspor in Turkey. But it looks like they do have Brad Smith, a 24-year-old defender, Australian international, who was formerly with Liverpool, an outside back. It looks like it's going to be a one-year loan from Bournemouth. Kind of an interesting move. He's played 10 times in the Premier League with Liverpool, 19 caps for Australia. He was part of Australia's 2018 World Cup qualifying campaign. Moved to Bournemouth on a deal that reportedly cost £3 million. And he's a left back, you know, to get an international standard left back at this stage in the transfer window after you get Rui Diaz. That's a pretty good bit of business if you're the Seattle Sounders and you're 5 points out of the final playoff spot. You're in a really good spot with Real Salt Lake ahead of you, who has been up and down, really good at home, really bad on the road. You have an LA Galaxy team ahead of you that is just woeful defensively. You have an LAFC team ahead of you that hasn't been much better defensively. And you have a Kansas City team that was in a bit of a free fall until they got a win in Houston in a crazy match that saw three red cards. So Seattle is a team that I don't think anybody in the West wants to face right now.
No, and I think the top two spots with FC Dallas and Portland are pretty much, you know, I think that's what's going to be a real battle there. But, I mean, from 3 to 6 to get in the playoffs, I mean, it's very open. You know, you can see Seattle climbing, you know, up into maybe getting a, you know, hosting a home match for the in knockout round. So very open there from the 3 to 6 spots in the West. And now let's another team, Jason. I'm going to – They've won two matches in a row. I'm going to go Columbus and stock up. You know, Justin Merrim coming back to the crew. I'm glad to see him get out of that Orlando situation and go back to Columbus. I think he's going to be really great there again. And I'm saying stock up because I think their next match versus Houston, Houston's going to be without, I think, the manager and three players because they got all red carded. So I think that's a 3 points at home. So then they're going to come, I think, into the Benz, you know, from around 2 weeks from now with three matches in a row that they've won. So I think they're going to come in the Benz on a hot streak.
Yeah, it seems like that's the recurring theme for Atlanta United this season is to catch teams on a hot streak. And Columbus should be another one. I think Merrim gives them a big lift. I think that win at Red Bull Arena kind of solidified the crew as a top eight team and a playoff team. They have enough of a cushion now that I think they're pretty comfortable and they can fine tune as they get into the stretch run. I want to see how they incorporate Merrim. You know, Justin Merrim was a player who wanted out of Columbus last year, requested a trade, I think, I want to say during the season, and he requested it again afterwards, and he gets the deal, goes to Orlando, and it's so miserable there that he wants to go back. I've never seen anything like that. We'll see. But Merrim is a talented player. We'll just see if he can get back into some form, because he did not look like himself in Orlando at all.
And stock down now, Jason. I'm going to go with the Loons. Losing at home, and now they've got five straight matches on the road, and I'm going to just list them off right here. So they've got LA Galaxy on the road next. Then they got FC Dallas on the road, Sporting Kansas City, DC United, Real Salt Lake, and then when they come back at home after that stretch, they have Portland and NYCFC at home to end September. They've got a brutal stretch coming up, and I don't think they're going to keep on going down the table, unfortunately.
It's as rough as it gets. I think they had to get this 3 points over Seattle, and the loss pretty much dooms their season. And then when you take everything else in, now that they've traded Ramirez and they picked up a bunch of allocation money, I don't know if they have plans to do something with it immediately. You have the Calvo consistently saying weird things to the media. Now Calvo and Quintero had a bit of a tiff. I mean, you just have lots of stuff going on around the Loons right now. And Adrian Heath has his hands full trying to manage his roster at the moment. I don't think he's doing a great job of keeping everybody in line at the moment. So they have to bounce back quickly. If they lose a couple in a row, you know, they got two losses now. If they lose the first game on this road trip, it could be curtains for the Loons.
And now the next stock down team, Houston, they are on a three-match losing streak, and without, you know, three players and the manager going to Columbus, I think that's going to be four losses, and then they are going down the table again, and they are outside the playoffs right now, Jason. What do you think about Houston's chances for the rest of the year?
I mean, Houston, at the moment, they haven't won in their last five. It's a bad spot for them. And the thing about the Dynamo last year, BBVA Compass Stadium was a fortress. They did not drop points there. And now they're 6-4-2 at home. And they're still not good on the road. They're 1-5-4. They've been able to turn a few of those losses into draws that we saw last year. But that's not good enough. It's just not good enough. I think they have a lot of talent. I think Wilmer Cabrera is an underrated manager. But the injuries to Juan David Cabezas, they haven't had a six all season. And with that high-powered attack, with Manotas, with Ellis, with Kyoto, you've got to have some protection so they can get forward and do what they need to do. Tomas Martinez has not been the player that I think they hoped he would be. And without a six, they're just not good enough. And Houston's got some soul-searching to do in the offseason.
Now let's go into our MLS news portion of the show. Some transfer news, Jason, saw today. Sporting Kansas City made a trade today. Why don't you tell everybody more about that?
Oh, we'll come back to Sporting Kansas City. We're going to go ahead and jump in with the Christian Ramirez trade that was announced while we were recording. LAFC picks up Christian Ramirez in exchange for $250,000 in general allocation money in 2018 and 2019, $100,000 in targeted allocation money in 2018, $200,000 in targeted allocation money in 2019, and up to $200,000 in future allocation money based off the player's performance with the club. So that's a lot. That's a lot of cash headed to Minnesota for Christian Ramirez. I don't have my calculator in front of me, but that's a lot of zeros in AM, both GAM and TAM, going to the Loons. I'm intrigued because I would not have expected LAFC to be in the Christian Ramirez sweepstakes. I didn't think they needed a forward with the way Diamande has played and what we've seen out of Marco Arana. Unless there's something going on with Diamande and the injury or Arana, I don't know why they make this move. And I don't know why they spend that much money on Christian Ramirez, who is a guy who can score you double-digit goals in this league. He did it last year. But I don't know if he demonstrably makes LAFC a better team at this point. So I'm intrigued by this move. I don't know if it's the right one for LAFC. We'll have to wait and see a little bit, unless there's other things that are going to happen off of this. From the Minnesota side, you know, once you made the move and went out and got a designated player forward, Ramirez or Dan Lotti was going to go. And it sounds like there were more issues behind the scenes in terms of Ramirez, so Minnesota made their decision. It's sad for the fans who, you know, kind of watched Ramirez grow up with them and with the club. And a link, you know, back to the history from the lower divisions. But he just, for whatever reason, never completely got that trust from Adrian Heath. And he was always kind of in and out of the lineup. Dan Lotti would get some time. Ramirez would get back in the lineup. And then this year, you know, going out into the market to get a forward, I think, you know, the writing was on the wall. So now we see what Minnesota can do with all this allocation money, because they have – issues and they have things that they have to solve. You know, if you look at Minnesota next year, though, if Sam Cronin comes back and you have a number six that is at that level, Kevin Molino comes back and you get an attack with Molino, with Quintero, you've got some firepower in this group. But I think you have to take this allocation money and maybe use it in a not as exciting way, but you need to get some top flight defenders. And I think you need a goalkeeper as well. So Minnesota's got work to do. This might be the start of their build as they get ready to open a stadium next year. And you would think that as you saw Quintero come in this year, you're seeing them spend some money. You would think everything is full bore for Minnesota to be a playoff team in 2019.
Respect the Loons and respect Cal, though. Right, Jason?
We'll see about that. I think there's still a lot of questions about how much respect they get, and Calvo needs to stop talking because he keeps saying very strange things, and now he's telling the media not to compare players and that it's hurting the team, and that's the media. I don't know if he understands the media's role, but anyway, let's get back to the other deal. Sporting Kansas City, they get Christian Nemeth, who has been with them before. He had a good season in 2015, scored 10 goals in 28 matches, scored goals in the Open Cup that year too that Kansas City won, went to Qatar in 2016, came back to MLS last summer. New England spent a decent bit of allocation money to get Nemeth in the allocation order. They gave that to Columbus. Kansas City tried to get the number one spot in the allocation order last year, but New England gave Columbus more allocation money. Then it seemed like Nemeth never really got fit. Then Jay Heaps got fired. Then Brad Friedel was hired, and Brad Friedel seemed to forget that Nemeth was even on the roster. But Friedel's forgotten Juan Agudelo's there too sometimes, so there you go. And now it's a deal where Kansas City had talked about going out and spending a lot of money on a number nine, and they didn't have to spend that much money, but is Nemeth really going to change things for SKC? They ended up giving New England $250,000 in targeted allocation money, $100,000 in general allocation money, and their first round pick in the 2020 MLS Super Draft. I guess the good thing is Nemeth knows the system. He knows, you know, he knows Peter Vermes. He knows what he'll be asked to do. The system's changed a little bit since he was there last. He can play as the nine. He can play out wide. If he's the fit, okay, then Kansas City got a steal. If he's the missing piece for them, because they haven't had consistent goal scoring since they traded Dom Dwyer, if he's the guy, and he blends in well with Felipe Gutierrez and the rest of the crew, then there you go. I'm a little skeptical. I think Kansas City needed a little bit more than Nemeth.
And Jason, does Seattle have some incoming players coming in? Is that right?
That's the one we talked about from Bournemouth. It looks like that's going to happen. Stay tuned on that. Hurtado, they have lost. Hurtado signed with Konyaspor in Turkey. So they were trying to get another Peruvian national team player, but looks like they're going to get a left back. There's going to be lots of moves around the league, I think, as we get through this transfer window. It closes on Wednesday. Two other guys that you have to keep an eye on are Juan Agudelo and Jonathan Osorio. Both of these guys are out of contract at the end of the season. According to Sam Stage called MLSsoccer.com, Agudelo is starting to get interest from clubs in Spain and from Turkey. He can sign a pre-contract now because he has 6 months left on his deal, and you can sign a pre-contract for your next destination, essentially, and there's no transfer fee or anything to it. So Agudelo is a question. When you get into this spot, there could be a team that wants to sign Agudelo to a long-term and makes a deal with New England for him. Osorio is in the same spot in Toronto. And I'm a little surprised that it's dragged on. You know, he's a hometown guy. He's had, I think, a career year. We saw firsthand at the Benz on Saturday how important he is. He had the game-winning or game-equalizing assist. I wonder if Osorio is going to be back with Toronto. And I wonder if somebody threw some money at Toronto, if they would be willing to part with him now. I don't know. It doesn't look like it, but when you get into the situation, crazy things can happen. And Osorio is a guy who I think still has, you know, room for improvement. So I would be surprised if teams aren't at least asking and kicking the tires about, one, what's it going to take to get Osorio at this stage with 6 months left on his deal? And two, what's the likelihood of getting Osorio to sign a long-term deal with another team?
And let's briefly talk about FC Cincinnati nearing 25,000 season tickets for a 2019 MLS season. They've made a couple signings already. So, I mean, looks like they're going to hit the ground running, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. FC Cincinnati, a lot of people kind of assumed that they might come in closer to what Minnesota did than what Atlanta and LAFC have done, and not so much. 25,000 season tickets is where they're close to now. They're expecting to get at least to that going into their first MLS season. They will be playing at Nippert Stadium on the campus of the University of Cincinnati while they build their new stadium. They got Fernando Adi. They got Fatai Alashe from Portland and from San Jose, respectively. Those guys are on their USL roster now, and they're going to finish out the current USL season in Cincinnati. So you have the coaching staff that gets to work with these guys for the rest of the season and build a rapport with them and kind of build around them, because there will be more players from this USL roster that'll make the jump up. I mean, anywhere between 4 and 8 players, I think, will make the jump up. So Adi and Alashe are the first two like MLS guys. I think there's others who will be key players in MLS for FC Cincinnati, and we'll see Adi and Fatai Alashe here in Atlanta at Colray Field before the year is out, when Cincinnati comes to town to face ATL UTD too.
And let's just give a couple quick announcements for everybody. Just want to let you know that the 19 on the game soccer scarves are still available for purchase. That link is pinned on my Twitter account. I'm at ATLSoccer929. And just, if you're interested in getting some soccer scarves, go to that link, help 19 on the game soccer coverage. We really appreciate it. And stoppage time is this Wednesday at 2 p.m. on the 19 on the game Facebook page. Again, Jason Longshore, myself, and Mike Conti. We'll break down Toronto 2-2 draw, and we'll talk some more about LA United, and also we'll do a little preview of the Columbus match. And Jason, what is your busy schedule on 19 the game the rest of the week?
Well, without a game this week, it's kind of a weird week. I don't know what's going to happen this weekend when I'm not either on a plane or at the Benz. I'm going to be a little confused. We do, actually, not on 92.9, but tomorrow we have the 90 seconds plus the second half of the ATL-UTD2 match with Ottawa that was suspended due to lightning, about a month ago now, that we were there till midnight trying to get that game in, didn't get it in. Now we get to finish it tomorrow. It's a special invite only match. John Nelson and myself will be on the stream, so you can check that out and watch. You can also keep up with everything on Twitter at ATLUTD2, and that will be interesting. I've never called a 46 minute continuation of a match before, so I don't know what to expect out of that one. So that's tomorrow night, Wednesday, before stoppage time. I'll be on with Rick and John, the midday show at 1 o'clock. And then I will not be on Friday because the Falcons preseason will be on. So there will be no AMA with Bunker Mentality. Maybe we'll do a Twitter AMA. I don't know yet.
Gotcha. And now let's close the show off with match previews. And going to go with this first one, the first desperation derby of the weekend, Jason. New England hosting Philadelphia. That's going to be a big one for both clubs wanting to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, New England's 2 points clear. The Revolution are in sixth place. Philadelphia is right behind them, 2 points back. I think Philly's the better team. I think Philly just has not been able to find a goal scorer this season. CJ Sapong, you know, forgot how to score goals at the worst time possible for the Union. With New England trading Nemeth, picking up some allocation money, there's rumors that maybe Kellen Rowe is on the move as well. Philadelphia, haven't really heard any rumors about moves for the Union, but if they could find a goal scorer, that would be a pretty nice fit. Christian Ramirez would have been a really nice fit for the Union, but I digress. I think Philadelphia is the better team, but this one is at New England, and the Revolution should get a point as at a minimum here. But I just, if Philadelphia could just get somebody hot scoring goals, I think they're a playoff team.
Yeah, and for everybody, New England is at sixth place with 29 points, and Philadelphia is right behind them at 27 points. So if Philadelphia beats New England, then they will leapfrog them into the sixth spot. So a massive match in New England this weekend on Saturday. So make sure you tune in for that one. And now let's do Eastern Conference, Western Conference. Let's do a Real Salt Lake versus Montreal on Saturday. Jason, what do you think about this matchup with teams that are, you know, in the playoffs currently, but, you know, still need to rack up the points to keep that momentum?
Montreal's level on points with New England, but they've played two more matches, so it's a little bit more desperate for the Impact. Another team that could use the number nine and might be busy in the market before Wednesday. Salt Lake, they've been bad on the road, so they can't really slip up here. They need another win at home because you have Seattle breathing down their neck. I think Salt Lake gets it done, but this might be one of those that, depending on what Montreal does this week in the transfer market, we might be thinking differently about this on Saturday.
And now let's go with this is a big one in the Western Conference. LAFC versus Sporting Kansas City. LAFC hosting this one on Saturday. And Jason, LAFC, they have been, struggling the past couple of matches. They've kind of hit a little bump, and they need to win this one at home or get some points to keep their momentum going for their playoff run, because right now it's looking a little not quite dicey, but they're struggling, and Sporting KC got a big win this past weekend versus Houston, so both teams trying to get that maybe have that home field advantage for the knockout round.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly convincing for Sporting Kansas City. It was a 1-0 win in Houston. It was their first win in six. LAFC's only won one in their last six. I don't know where this one goes, to be perfectly honest. Nemeth, is he the answer for Kansas City? We'll just have to wait and see. LAFC, the Diamande injury, is that something to be worried about? How long does it take Christian Ramirez to slot in? If Diamande's healthy, does Christian Ramirez slot in? Does Bob Bradley try to go to a 4-4-2 type of situation to play two up top? I'm fascinated by LAFC after this Ramirez trade, and I'm quite intrigued by Kansas City with Nemeth coming in to see if he's the answer for them. Neither team is really showing anything special at the moment, and I think they have to soon because they're both on 36 points. They both played 22 matches. The Galaxy are 1 point behind them in fifth. Salt Lake is 2 points behind them in sixth. Vancouver is still in it in seventh, 30 points. And then Seattle, with four wins in a row, is in eighth on 29 points. So it's a battle between Kansas City in third all the way down to Seattle in eighth. And I don't think either one of these teams can really afford to lose this one.
And also to note, LAFC's got travel to Houston on Wednesday for the U.S. Open Cup match for the semifinal. So, they just, traveled the Red Bulls across the country, come back. Then they've got to go to Houston for a semifinal and then coming back for the for the match on the weekend versus Sporting Kansas City. So they've got a little fixture congestion right now too to note.
Yeah, they got to head to Houston and face a really ticked off Houston Dynamo team right now.
Do those suspensions carry the U.S. Open Cup or no?
No, they don't.
Okay.
No, it's only league play, and I don't think any of them are significant enough to rise above that. If something is like egregious violent conduct or referee assault or anything like that, it can carry over as a global suspension, but none of those do.
Okay. And now let's go. This is a big one, Jason. I think Atlanta United supporters will be looking at this one. And this is going to be massive for Toronto. Toronto versus NYCFC on Sunday. Toronto hosting, NYCFC. This is a big one for Toronto, and they got no Chris Mavenga after that stupidity at the end of the match, with that LGP incident. What do you think about this one?
Yeah, Mavenga has really been carrying them defensively without Drew Moore. He might be back for this one. It might be his first game back in a long time. He might be back for the Canadian Championship final, first leg in Vancouver on Wednesday night. Talked about fixture congestion with LAFC. Toronto's got the same. And I think for Toronto, it's even more tricky because Toronto doesn't qualify for the CONCACAF Champions League through Major League Soccer play. They qualify by winning the Canadian Championship, which is the equivalent of the U.S. Open Cup. So we know how seriously Toronto takes CONCACAF. They're going to take this game in Vancouver seriously. How seriously? And, do they maybe just try to play defensively in Vancouver and then go for it in the second leg at home? I don't know. I'm intrigued. NYC, does David Villa come back here? The rookie, the young guy they just signed, the 19-year-old Valentin Castellanos, he scored in his debut this weekend. Does he get another one? To Joy Schrade, who I thought was really impressive earlier this season. After he got injured, he hasn't really been quite as effective. Does he get back into form? This is one of those kind of statement games, I think, for NYCFC. If they're able to get a win on the road in Toronto and possibly kill Toronto off, then I think they're going to be in that race for the top of the Eastern Conference and the Supporters' Shield. But if Toronto gets the win here, one, everybody at the bottom of the Eastern Conference has to start looking over their shoulder in a big way. And this is where, think back to last year for Atlanta United. Everybody was worried about the fixture congestion, but it almost felt like Atlanta kept gaining momentum in those games at Mercedes-Benz. If Toronto takes the momentum out of the Benz on Saturday, rescuing a point late, they go to Vancouver and get a win in the first leg on the road in the Canadian Championship final, they're going to be flying when they get into BMO Field on Sunday. And that could give them the momentum to get the win here that they desperately need.
Now let's go with, I think I'm a name this Desperation Derby number 2, DC United hosting Orlando on Sunday, Jason. Loser's going to be a big trouble for the playoffs. DC United, they've got a ton of home matches left, but they need to, this is a winnable game for them, and they need to kickstart because they have, and in the month of August, they've got 4 out of the next 5 at home. So after this, they've got Portland at home, New England, and they got on the road to Red Bulls with a derby match, and then they've got Philly at home. So they need a win here that, maybe kickstart their road to the playoffs.
Yeah, this is match number 20 for DC United, and this is one at home that you got to win. You have to beat Orlando City, who has given up 54 goals this season. It's one of the worst defenses in MLS history in Orlando, and you have to get a win there, especially with Yoshi Yotun suspended. So if you're DC United, it's not win or bust. I mean, you're not done if you don't get a win here, but then you're going to have to start winning some games that you're not going to be favored in. You're going to have to start pulling some upsets. Orlando, they've played 23 matches. This is number 24 for them. They're on 23 points. They are 6 points out of the final playoff spot. They do have a game in hand over Montreal, who's in fifth on 29 points. They're not done because nobody's run away yet in the East, but they're starting to run out of time. So a late season charge from Orlando is necessary at this point. Getting a win on the road in DC would give them a little bit of momentum. I think DC gets it done because I think they need it more, and I think they're the better team.
And now with the last match preview, let's go with it's a big one in the Western Conference, Seattle versus FC Dallas. Seattle hosting Dallas, and this is a big one because Seattle is in a run of form, and let's see if FC Dallas can bounce back from that shock loss to San Jose, Jason.
Yeah, we'll learn a lot about Dallas in this one. They're 5-3-2 on the road. They're one of the better teams on the road in MLS. But you're going up against the Seattle team that's 1-4 in a row. Seattle is 4-4-2 at home. That's not that great. They're 4-5-3 on the road. But this is not the same Seattle team that is the one that we're currently seeing on the field. It's not the same team that started the season. Seattle has a top flight defense as well. Dallas is not too shabby themselves defensively, but Seattle's only given up 25 goals this season in 22 matches. I want to see what else happens for Seattle in the transfer market because they're not done yet. If they get the left back from Bournemouth, they were trying to get Hurtado, if they still are chasing another player, then it could be a dramatically different Seattle team with a ton of momentum coming in. You know, even if those guys don't see the field this weekend, just to get them in and get that excitement going for the Sounders on top of 4 straight wins is big. Dallas, they got to be feeling the pressure from Portland at this point. I mean, Portland's 5 points back, but they have 2 games in hand over Dallas, and they haven't lost in 15. You know, that those footsteps get louder and louder at this stage of the year. So I want to see how Dallas bounces back after a big slip up to San Jose. A win on the road against Seattle and ending their winning streak would be a statement win for Dallas.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at their schedule. So FC Dallas, after they travel to Seattle, they've got the Loons at home. They've got Houston on the road, San Jose Earthquakes on the road, and they've got another Houston derby match. So, you know, they've got some winnable games after this one. So let's see if they can, you know, get a win and really, kind of re-spark it, you know, their road to the Supporters Shield. It's going to be a fascinating one because Seattle's got a ton of momentum. So that's going to, I think that's the late game, right, Jason?
Yeah, it is.
Well, that's the show, everybody. Thanks for tuning in, and just be on the lookout for more of more coverage for us. You know, I'm at ATL Soccer 929 and Jason's at Longshoe. And we'll talk to you on Wednesday for stoppage time at 2:00 on the 99 The Game Facebook page. Jason, thanks for joining me again for this week in MLS.
No worries. See y'all on Wednesday.